From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm producer Megan Mack, alongside host Evan Dawson. We opened the week the way most media outlets did, responding to the mass shooting in Orlando, Florida.
And first, we want to listen to some of the comments from Peter Moore on this program. He owns what he describes as the oldest gay bar in Rochester, the Bachelor's Forum. Here's his story of what it means to show real support for people in the LGBTQ community.
We just all got along and we loved each other for who we are. You know, I mean, take out this hatred, you know, just remove that. And we can accept each other for who we are. We don't have to love each other for who we are. But how about acceptance? And then, you know, my father is 90 years old. I came out to my dad. He had a tough time with it, you know. And my father loves me more today than he loved me 30 years ago. And again, we're not asking for love. How about just support? How about it's okay? You know, we can go to Trump and he wants to blame Obama for this and he should resign. And that's getting into another thing. This could happen. This happened. This could happen tomorrow. But if we make one change in acceptance and love, this won't happen.
How old were you when you came out to your dad?
30. And I'm 50 now. You know, and it was very difficult. It was probably one of the toughest things in my life that I did, you know, and I didn't want to disappoint my father. You know, I mean, it wasn't something that was okay. But my father comes to the bar on a yearly basis or more and sees the community and the support and the love that we all have together. My father goes, you have a family here. You have a community there that loves you. He goes, you're going to probably be one of the first gay mayors. I go, Dad, I'm not running for politics.
But that's changed,
right? Never say never, Peter.
I mean, because those are the moments where you say, well, of course we can change. You know, 20 years ago, that conversation was difficult. I am not at all saying, and look, it's a straight male. I can't even imagine. For some families, it's different for every family.
Oh, absolutely.
But I have to think that overall, that conversation is happening a little more easily, a little more regularly, a little more acceptedly than 20 years ago, yeah?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, it's acceptance. You know, we don't have to agree. You know, hey, I don't like the color of the shirt you're wearing or sweater you're wearing. It's acceptance. And it's okay. You know, it's okay for who we are and what we're doing and stuff. And again, my father loves... Excuse me, my husband, like all my other brother-in-laws. So, you know, it's wonderful to see that change, a 90-year-old man, you know, for acceptance, you know. And if this is truly a hate crime, it's sad, you know. And to even to do these things, it's sad.
We also welcome Sarir Fazali, the president of the local Islamic Center. He said that the local Muslim community stands in solidarity with the victims in Orlando.
He also addressed a question about why Islam views homosexuality as sinful and whether he would be okay with one of his own children being gay. He starts with a comment about violence and Islam in general.
There is nothing in Islam that would have called for anybody to act in the way that they did. I can't speak to, unfortunately, I'm not an expert on Islamic jurisprudence, and I don't want anybody to think that I am. However, I can tell you, Muslims are prohibited from engaging in interest-bearing transactions. They're prohibited from drinking alcohol. They're prohibited from gambling. They're prohibited from doing any number of things that, unfortunately, we do because we're human beings. That whether that makes some of us any less Muslims or more Muslims than others, whether you have a gay imam or not gay imam, that's going to be for the Almighty to decide. But I do know, and I can tell you that as a regular person, the number of things that Muslims are prohibited from doing that they do, and they do willingly and knowingly, whether or not it makes them a better or a worse Muslim, that's not for me to judge or decide.
Are there openly gay members of the Islamic Center in Rochester?
I have yet to meet one. I have yet to have somebody come up to me and introduce themselves as such. Do I think they're there? I do.
You think there are gay members, but not openly so?
Correct.
Is that a sign that Islam needs to be more welcoming, or at least sort of promote a different posture?
You know, I don't know about promotion because in Islam, especially at the Islamic Center, we welcome people from all different countries. We probably have people who worship at our place that come from 40 or 50 different countries. They bring with them their nation's what's the word I want to use? They bring with them their customs from their countries, and sometimes those do or do not jive exactly with, you know, what somebody might consider mainstream or regular Islam, because the country practices versus the religious practices can be different. So this is, as we say, everything in the house, whether it's discussing the incident that happened yesterday or what happened in Paris or San Bernardino or the homosexuality in the house, it's something that has to be discussed in the house. There has to be an open line of communication between any parent, Muslim or non-Muslim, and their child or children regarding any of these topics. I can't throw out and accept somebody to believe if I say yes, I would accept it, or no, I wouldn't accept it, because I'm speaking now to so many, you know, tens of thousands of people. They may just shrug it off and say he's just, you know, making it up. This is all about communication. And whether it's my house or somebody else's house, you know, people have to understand that how we teach our children and what we teach our children has to have the basis. And we have to be open to answering and accepting their questions.
They want to hear you say it's fine.
Because it is fine. It is.
Wednesday marked World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and it raised some important issues on the program about the different forms of abuse. While financial abuse may be among the most prevalent, we received a lot of listener questions and comments about physical abuse and neglect in nursing homes. Some of them were tough to hear.
Lori Cash is an advocate for nursing home reform. She began her fight when her own mother became paralyzed from the chest down after she was neglected in a local facility. Cash says families whose loved ones are in nursing homes or at home with AIDS should be especially aware of which drugs their loved ones are being prescribed.
In nursing homes, the use of drugs is euphemistically called chemical restraints, mm-hmm. and they're overused. And there was a proposition put before the United Nations, because it's a form of abuse, to drug someone so much that they just really can't function. And that goes on in nursing homes. I know when my mom had a reaction to a antibiotic, they wanted to put her on a very seriously powerful psychotropic, Haldol, which in my mind should be banned. I had to put an immediate stop to that. So the reliance and use of drugs is euphemistically called chemical restraints. And there's a lot of movement to try to end that.
When it comes to whether you are have a family member who's in a facility or maybe at home with hospice care, those kind of things, should there be clear lines on directing medical staff on what drugs to use and not? I mean, should that be clearly delineated? Is that easy to understand?
Well, it's hard if you don't have a medical background and you're working and to try mm-hmm. to get on the internet. I mean, I happen to know because of my background a lot of the drug interactions. You definitely do not want to deprive people of drugs that are necessary to alleviate their pain and anxiety. But you also don't want to over-medicate people who don't need those drugs.
Now let's turn to a conversation that struck a nerve with a lot of listeners. We talked about the ongoing debate over using Indian names and imagery for sports mascots. From local schools to the professional level, there are still questions over whether using Native American mascots and logos is a good idea.
We welcomed Michael Galbin, who is a historian at Ganondagan State Historic Site. He's also a Northern Paiute and Washoe Indian. He told the story of his own school experience that was so difficult for him.
When I went to West Rondequoit High School as a sophomore, I was interested in sports. I wanted to wrestle. I might even wanted to join the basketball team. And I had gone to the first wrestling practice, and then I realized that the mascot was the Indians, right? Okay, I can deal with that. And yet at the end of the week, when we had a homecoming game, you know, this young Native boy, aged whatever, 17, 16, attended the game with a couple of new friends that he'd made, and, you know, good guys. And we sat in the bleachers, and before the game, this guy comes running out blasting through a paper sign saying the Indians, and the fans erupted with war paint and feathers, and this guy kind of did this clownish, buffoonish dance around the field, and I just wanted to melt into the bleachers. I wanted to just disappear. And it was obvious to the friends that I'd gone with that I was uncomfortable, to say the least, and I felt that they were embarrassed for me. I never went back to a single game. I dropped out of wrestling, and I felt like it was not that I couldn't deal with it or handle it. I just didn't want to subject myself to that kind of humiliation. And so as a student in a public school that might be sitting there, one of maybe 10 or 2, or even if it was just me, I just feel like it's not fair that we still treat people this way. And it's not necessarily the mascot, the name. It becomes a magnet and a target for people and to bring out their stereotypes. Scalp the Indians in the newspaper, in the school paper. It's the war paint and the whooping. You know, it's just a cumulative effect. And I just don't want my children to have to go through the same things I did.
Did you feel like you had allies there? Did your friends act as allies?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, but I mean, they can't share in the experience the way I was,
sure.
But they certainly were sensitive. And, you know, I'm not going to say that I turned antisocial, but I just didn't feel welcome, you know, and I probably didn't have the capacity to express myself well enough at the time. But, you know, when I shared that story during the period in the 90s when Irondequoit was considering the name change, I mean, I feel like it had an impact.
And are you surprised now, 20 plus years later, Michael, that we have a lot fewer schools in our area using Indian imagery? Or are you surprised that in 2016 there are any?
Yeah, I'm surprised that we're still debating this issue. I really am.
And we close the week with a way to feel united when so much of the world is shaken. We talked to John Nugent, co-producer of the upcoming Rochester International Jazz Festival, and I thought he gave a beautiful description of why this year, more than most, this is important timing for the Jazz Fest. And he also looked back at the first Rochester Jazz Festival 14 years ago.
We all know what's going on in the world. That's just awful, the politics of terrorism and religious craziness. But this music takes you away from all that. It gives you an escape to a place where you can find inner peace and joy and be uplifted and transformed in terms of how you live your daily life. It's amazing what music can do to you, and I'm really excited about the overall painting that we have with all these different styles of artists coming here from around the world.
You know, it takes you away for sure, but an event like this is so international that it takes you away without feeling disconnected to the world. In fact, you feel more connected to the world.
You're in your home backyard, but the world is coming here. And all of these artists are really excited to come and perform for our audience because, you know, when you're in the middle of it here and locally, you don't really think of how you're perceived outside as in terms of your knowledge of music. But our audiences here are very well educated. And they know good music when they hear it. And they give it to the artists in terms of an electrical vibe. They feel that energy coming from the audiences, and the artists give it right back to them in many different ways. So it's a real positive energy on both sides of the stage, you know, from the stage and looking at the stage. Everybody's in it.
All right, so you said you're cruising at about 37,000
mm-hmm.
feet, but you go back 15 years, because this year is going to have more than 1,500 musicians, 325 shows, roughly, is that right?
Somewhere in that zone, yeah.
Okay.
Including free performances.
Remind us, year one, how many musicians, how many shows?
Well, the Club Pass series was 25 shows for $25.
That first year?
First year. Yeah. And we had, oh, of course, we had all our headliner shows. We had a Frontier Field. Aretha Franklin was here. The great Sonny Rollins. Norah Jones made her debut in the Rochester Jazz Festival when she was just breaking. She went on after the festival to sell 8 million records. And it was, you know, it was maybe 9 or 10 venues, and it was only 5 or 6 days long, the festival in the first year. And I think it was the third through the ninth, so maybe it may have been a week. And we've just made it, now it's 17 venues over 9 days, you know, quite a long number of bands, 3 different types of series, including our free open-air stages. We have our Eastman Theater series of headliner reserve seats, and we have our pass system, which is arguably one of the hippest experiences you can find in this country for a multitude of styles in one condensed period of time, to be able to go from venue to venue to venue. If you don't like something, go to the next venue, and you'll find music that you'll enjoy, I guarantee it.
And that's it for this edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can hear Connections every weekday afternoon on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio 89.5 FM.
And you can always hear us on the WXXI mobile app. I'm Megan Mack.
And I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great weekend.